When did you start writing songs in your life?
It's hard to say because I've been writing as long as I can remember. I have a memory of what I think is the first song I ever wrote, which was on, I'm pretty sure, like pink poster board for some reason. And like huge, like as if I were preparing for a science fair. And the lyrics were, I'll try to sing it with the melody. It was like, can you feel the feelings washing over our heads, and they're all different colors. Yeah, yeah. Blues, greens, yellows, reds.
Okay, that's really good.
And that was probably when I was probably like 9 or 8, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you play any instruments yet, or when did that happen?
I was in piano classes, and I hated them. I really hated them and would do everything that I could to avoid going, like pretending I was sick. But the thing is that I loved playing piano. I just didn't like being told what to do. So my parents eventually, once I kind of had the basics down, just let me stop going. But I still played piano because I loved it so much.
Do you still consider the piano like your home instrument?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's the one that I feel closest to.
Do you write most of your songs on it?
I would say I write about 60-40 right now, guitar and piano, just because I'm traveling. And so I don't always have access to a piano. At home, I have a Wurlitzer, which I prefer to write everything on. Nice. But obviously a Wurlitzer is not really the most travelable instrument. So
I love to ask people this question because everybody has a different answer. What is the relationship between music and lyrics for you when you write songs?
You know, it depends on the song. I think sometimes I get a full lyric going and it's everything that I need, and then the melody just comes later. Sometimes I get the melody and the lyrics. And then sometimes I only get a melody and I get bits and pieces of lyrics. Often I will get lyrics of some kind. It's rare that I'll only get a melody and I'll get no lyrics attached to it.
What's your relationship with recording, and how do you use that in the writing process?
So I'm a voice notes girly. I have thousands and thousands of voice notes. And what I tend to do is I have a recording of the direction that the song seems to be going in. And that can start as one and end up being 15 recordings as the song progresses. Very bad about naming things. So it's quite disorganized. And then I have in my written notes app in my phone, the lyrics that correspond to that recording. And usually that is how I write songs and record them.
When you write a song, are you relating to it as a performance, or are you relating to it as a recording, like a finished recording?
You know, I try not to preempt the song with any guesses about what it's going to wind up as, because there's just so much that winds up on the cutting room floor that I feel like the more pressure I put on a song energetically, the less happy it's going to be to come into full fruition at the end. So I try not to put too much pressure on myself or on the material, and just like wait and see, basically, because sometimes you get really close to finishing a recording, or you even finish it and it still doesn't wind up on a record or whatever. But to fully answer your question, I rarely think about how it'll be performed, like on a stage.
So you're more of a like record person.
Yeah.
What's your sort of story as a listener of records? Like how did you get into music as a listener?
Similar to songwriting, like music has just been kind of at the forefront of my consciousness for as long as I can remember, like probably before any other form of media. So my dad is like a huge music lover, probably would have been a musician or a DJ if he decided not to become a lawyer. But he had like an incredible record collection and was also just very supportive of my exploration of music, even though like in my youth, it was very different than his own. But like if we were in his car, it was like his car, his rules. So we were listening to like Nina Hagen and Talking Heads and Joni Mitchell and Leonard Cohen. And we had no, like if I tried to put on My Chemical Romance, it was like a hard no.
Uh-huh. That's so interesting because those are all artists that remind me of you so much.
Yeah. Whether I like it or not, it's integrated in there.
Yeah. So how did your tastes change over time?
Well, yeah, I wanted to carve out, I guess, my own relationship to music. So I didn't actively reject my dad's taste. Even as a kid, I always kind of liked it. Mm-hmm. I liked what he listened to, even if I thought it was strange. But I also was like an emo kid and a scene kid. And I was like the number one My Chemical Romance fan in the world, probably at okay, the time. Cool. I still know every single one of their songs off my heart.
I have bands like that too. And I'm not going to say who they are.
Yeah. It's, you know, like I have no shame about it. I remember a conversation where my dad was like, you'll see in 15 years, you're going to regret being such a big fan of these guys. And look at me now, you know, almost 30 years old. No, I still have lots of love for My Chemical Romance. But I even as a kid, felt proud of having an eclectic taste in music and never really felt like, I remember I started saying at one point, I like everything but country, but the only reason I said that was because I heard someone say it and I thought there was like a reason I shouldn't like country. And then soon after I realized like country's incredible and I loved it. Yeah.
How do you relate to the concept of influences in your own music?
I have a complicated relationship with the concept of influences because I'm so heavily influenced, not just by other artists, but by just my environment and the people that I'm around. Like I'm the kind of person who, if I'm not watching it, I'll like develop other people's mannerisms. And I'm really like a sponge in that way. So I guess the short answer is I don't know. I'm still trying to navigate it. I think for me, the more I attach myself to any particular influence, the further I get from like the truth of what it is I'm supposed to be presenting to the world. So I'm kind of just now working on my second record, putting in parameters that allow me to distance myself from influence entirely, which is like, you know, not listening to music while I'm writing or recording, not like reading very much or watching a lot of media, and just like, yeah, just beginning to put in those frameworks because it feels necessary for someone like me who's so like sensitive to their and influenced by their environment.
Wow, that's so much more like spiritually involved a relationship with influences than I feel like most of the musicians that I know are. And that's not to say they aren't like spiritual people either, but like most people are so willing to just be like A, B, C, D, like those four songwriters are like where I got everything. And you're talking about like the room you're in as being at least as big of a deal. That's a lot though.
It's a lot. And, it changes all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to know about your musical life as a journey in a literal sense of places it has taken you, ending up in the place where you're sitting right now.
Understood. Okay, got you. Well, in terms of the container of this project that is Shirley Hurt, she started in Toronto in my bandmate Harrison and Patrick's house. That was where she was kind of like born or even conceived. And then it took me like on the road through North America for 6 months with Harrison when we were living in a trailer and traveling around. And we spent lots of time at the end of that trip in California, specifically in Joshua Tree, which is where probably like 75% of the first Shirley record was written.
Cool.
And then after returning from California back to Canada and then back to Toronto specifically, I kind of stuck around there for a little while and then went to New York and then went back. And now I am trying to work through the second record, the sophomore record that everybody told me to worry about that I didn't listen to. And now I'm like, and I'm doing that part of that at Ram Dass's house right now. So I'm at Ram Dass's house in Maui, Hawaii.
Okay. So Joshua Tree, Ram Dass's house, and New York City.
Yeah.
And Toronto. Yeah. Toronto. The places, the powerful places are seemingly like some kind of material for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in all of the places that you've mentioned, but I am particularly interested to hear how Ram Dass's house is working for you as material. And also I just want to celebrate the fact that you're eating on the show right now.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. I'm eating a clementine that was picked from the tree over there.
I couldn't have it any other way. Like, you have to be doing that in order for this to be complete.
I think I do. I do that all the time. I realize when I'm in interviews, I'm like drinking and eating and I just don't, like, who cares? Yes. Kind of, in a way, but also
I actively care. I care in a good way. I care that that this part of your artist experience is happening to me. So thank you for eating.
My pleasure.
Oh God, that's such a good quote. Tell me about working with Ram Dass's house as a musical medium.
Well, the last time I was here was in 2019 for his memorial. That was a very different time in my life, but it was just a very different time energetically in this house, because to kind of keep it concise, you know, he had a team of caregivers that were in charge of helping him with his body in the latter years of his life, right? So I was pretty close with all of those people who had that job. And when I was here, I was kind of sitting with and alongside them in their grieving, and also like the collective grieving of like the hundreds of people that came to celebrate his life. Mm. And now there's a whole new slew of people here who are assisting the process of turning this place into kind of like a sacred ashram like environment for people to come and do their practices, whatever those practices are. So, you know, that can be anything from cutting the grass to cooking people dinner to sweeping the floors to, you know, fixing the sidewalk so that nobody trips. And you just do whatever you need to do here. So that's partially why I'm here. And the other reason that I'm here is to work on my art and to connect with my internal center so that the work can kind of just come through without having to try too hard. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of a good place to do that, because like I said before our interview started, this place is like a spiritual pressure cooker. Mm-hmm. So all of your karma that you like haven't really quite been wanting to look at comes up here, because that's just the environment. That's how everybody wants it energetically here.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is that about the people? Is that about being with so many people doing so much practice?
There's that. There's just the fact that so many great teachers have walked through this house, that their energy is here, that Ram Dass himself, his energy is very much still here, especially in his study and in his room. And, you know, just the sheer fact that when you're not, like you said, a house full of 10 people, shit gets real. You know, you can't help it.
I want to ask you about company and solitude. And I feel like people who make music have very different relationships with that too, and tend to be sort of on one end or the other of a spectrum. And it sounds like to me, you've mentioned a lot of people, collaborators, but also like these people in this house with you are sort of collaborators, maybe some of them explicitly, but certainly like just by virtue of all being in the pressure cooker together. Do you tend to be more, and you talked about how just like the energy all around you is like your biggest influence at the moment. Like, do you tend to be, I hesitate to use the word productive, but like, does having people around get you to write songs?
Maybe. I haven't really thought about it. I know that for me to actually physically do the work, I need to do it alone. So as in like sitting with my phone or my notebook or whatever tool that I'm using and a guitar and writing it down, I need to be alone. And to gestate on ideas that are not yet fully formed, I also need to be alone. Mm-hmm. So like if I'm in a house full of people and they're conversating, I'm very sound sensitive. Mm-hmm. So if I hear things happening, like I will not be able to work. So I think I fill my cup around people in some ways, but in terms of actually creating, that's a solo mission. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That makes me wonder about sound and silence in the same way. Like you used a vessel, an empty full vessel metaphor just now, a cup metaphor. Do you feel like, what is your relationship with silence as a musician? Mm. Like, do you cherish silence or do you fill silence or both? Or how does it work with you?
I definitely cherish silence, and I think I cherish it more and more as I get older. Mm. I find myself feeling it sometimes, but usually that's a product of my own anxiety. Mm-hmm. And if I'm maybe feeling less of that, then I'm more comfortable resting mm-hmm. in silence, either by myself or with other people, mm-hmm. you know, because if I find if I'm with someone, you know, and we're sitting together and there's a pause, it's usually a good barometer for where I'm at. If mm-hmm. I can just like be comfortable in that pause. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Have you ever experienced silence in your musical practice that way as a good thing? Like nothing's coming and it's okay?
Yeah. Yeah. I like anxiety comes up that I think comes up for every artist who's ever lived, which is like, oh no, I did all my art and I'll never get anything good ever again.
Yeah.
And that's it for me. Yeah. You know, so that happens. But then also because that has happened before and that I've gotten more.
Yeah.
I can kind of temper it and just be like, I know you feel that way. It's okay. It's not going to be like that forever because no moment ever is forever, ever. Mm. So it's fine. Mm. Yeah.
That speaks of a deep faith, which is something I know you have. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's anything you can say about the relationship between faith and art that maybe not just as a practice, but even also as like a theme, like does mm-hmm. like, does art have a role in engendering faith either in you or in listeners? Like how does faith appear in your music?
I think for me, my work is, like an ever expanding experiment and just trying to tell the truth. Mm. And it doesn't have to be like my personal lived experience style truth necessarily, mm-hmm. though sometimes that's what it is. It's just the truth of whatever is coming through me. And my only job is to be clear enough of my opinions and personality and desire to allow that truth to kind of come in. And then what happens with it after really doesn't have all that much to do with me. My only job is trying to get it to its fullest expression, really. And if people like it, amazing. And if they don't like it, it's not my business. Mm. So I guess it's kind of like it's maintaining like a one-pointedness in understanding my role and not trying to shift into another role of like pop star or songwriter or performer mm-hmm. or any, those are just roles. My role is just vessel, yes. Just vessel. And then maybe if I want to push it a little further after vessel is done, it's the table the vessel is on, uh-huh. you know, also.
that reminds me of a question that occurred to me earlier when you talked about Shirley Hurt. You used the pronoun she for mm-hmm. her. And mm-hmm. I can you just tell me why and who that is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like to me, Shirley is like an identity, like a living, breathing thing that isn't necessarily really Sophia, like Sophia is like a multi-dimensional like being in a body doing the thing, and Shirley is a musical expression and has a visual identity attached to her, but she can only be so many dimensions because she has a specific role to play, which is to present that music. And so I don't know, like, I'm going to play with her for as long as she wants to play with me. But I don't have any expectations of her that she has to be anything specific. And like, I see her as her own thing.